Radio Prague News.
Cardinal Barron's remains are to be interred in a final resting place at St. Vitus Cathedral in Prague. A special screening of Amadeus honoring Miloš Forman was held at the Municipal House, and Kometa Brno have clinched the Extraliga title. Cardinal Josef Beran will be interred in his final resting place at St. Vitus Cathedral on Monday evening. His remains were transferred to the Czech Republic last week, decades after their return was initially blocked by the former communist regime. The cardinal died in Rome in 1969, and his last wish was always for his body to be returned to his homeland. Cardinal Beran's coffin arrived by military plane last Friday. Church bells across Prague were rung to mark the historic occasion. His coffin will not be buried below ground at the cathedral, but be placed in a new sarcophagus within the site. Hundreds of attendees, including members of the Czech film industry and other public figures, packed Prague's historic municipal house on Sunday evening for a special screening of the film Amadeus. The screening was to honor the film's director Miloš Forman, who died on April the 13th at the age of 86. The screening of the director's cut was held in Smetana Hall. Amadeus is considered by some to be Forman's greatest masterpiece. Ahead of the screening, the Prague Symphony Orchestra performed the overture to Don Giovanni and part of Mozart's Symphony No. 38 in D major, conducted by Tomáš Brauner. The Czech Republic's famous Karlštejn Castle, located near Beroun outside of Prague, is to be renovated at the cost of some 95 million crowns. According to the Czech news agency, 85% of the costs will be covered from EU funds. The head of the National Heritage Institute, Nagia Goričková, said on Monday that the castle would remain open during the renovation project, although some parts of the site would periodically have to remain closed. The renovation of Karlštejn will include the creation of a new modern visitors' center. In other news, in sport, hockey's Pittsburgh Penguins made it a miserable night for opponents, the Philadelphia Flyers, and in particular, Czech goalie Michal Neuwirth, who probably wishes he could have a do-over. The Czechs stopped 20 shots by the Pens, but allowed 7 goals in a game which finished 8-5 in favor of the defending Stanley Cup champions. The win means the Penguins move forward to the second round. The series tally was 4-2. The Penguins are aiming to be the first NHL team since Al Arbor's New York Islanders in the early 80s to win the Stanley Cup 3 times in a row. I'm Jan Wellinger, and that's all the news for now.
You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Ruth Franíková. Coming up in today's program, Social Democrats narrowly agree to restart government talks with ANO, the introduction of massively cheaper train and bus travel for Czech pensioners and students has been delayed, and later on in the program we talk to zoologist Karolina Brandlová about Czech efforts to save the critically endangered Western Derby eland antelope in Senegal. All that and more coming up, so please stay with us. Czech government negotiations appear to be back on track. The Social Democrats party leadership has endorsed the launch of fresh talks with ANO following concessions by the biggest parliamentary party and October election winner. But it's still far from a done deal. Chris Johnston has the details.
The Social Democrat leadership, headed by Jan Hamáček, has agreed to restart coalition negotiations with the ANO party of business billionaire and current Prime Minister Andrej Babiš. But the leadership's endorsement was lukewarm at best, reflecting the caution of the centre-left party at getting into the proverbial government bed with Babiš. In fact, it was just one vote that tipped the balance in favour of restarting negotiations with ANO. Of the 26 strong leadership, 14 were in favour, 5 against and 7 abstained. Hamáček admitted it was a difficult vote and also described it as one of the most crucial in the party's recent history. Many Social Democrats are hesitant about a deal with the ANO leader, who's facing criminal charges for EU subsidy fraud and appeared in archives as a communist-era agent. The ANO leader says the current criminal case has been fabricated by his enemies and denies being an agent in the 1980s. ANO made concessions to revive talks with the Social Democrats and, for now, ditched the only real alternative, that dealing with the anti-immigrant, anti-EU Freedom and Direct Democracy Party of Tomio Okamura. The most notable retreat was agreeing that the Social Democrats get the Ministry of Interior, which the party sees as crucial to ensure that police investigations into Andrej Babiš or other possible instances of conflict of interest are pursued normally. And Jan Hamáček says he's seeking an extra guarantee in the coalition agreement.
We are going to stand by the principle that if a member of the government is found guilty in the first court verdict and does not resign, then the whole coalition agreement becomes invalid.
And although ANO and the Social Democrats previously came to agreements on most policy areas, there are still apparently some outstanding issues there as well in the share-out of posts in the lower house of parliament. Jiří Zimola is deputy chairman of the Social Democrats and been one of the lead negotiators. He outlined some of the changes the party is still seeking.
There are some changes relating to the leadership of the lower house of parliament, and there are issues relating to the policy program.
I know leaders say a full coalition agreement between the parties should be ready within 2 weeks. But it should be remembered that it's not just a two-way deal that's being put together here. While ANO and the Social Democrats are the main players, the Communists literally have a supporting role, and their members of parliament are crucial for an overall majority in the lower house of parliament. As for their newly re-elected leader, Wojciech Filip, pointed out, the Communists have their own policy demands as well and are seeking a say on who should be in the new cabinet, having already expressed reservations about some of the current team.
Of course, we want to know if these are people who deserve our support and are trustworthy.
Communist Party leader Wojciech Filip ending that report by Chris Johnston. The introduction of massively cheaper train and bus travel for Czech pensioners and students has been put back until September. The acting Minister of Transport says the delay is due to the fact that regional authorities are unable to meet the original deadline. Ian Willoughby has more.
Last month, the ANO government in resignation approved a massive reduction in public transport fares for pensioners and students in the Czech Republic. Specifically, this involves seniors over the age of 65 and children and students between 6 and 26. Both groups were to receive a discount of no less than 75% on train and bus services from the 10th of June, when new timetables come into effect. Announcing the move, the acting Prime Minister Andrej Babiš said it would be a simple and fair system. For his part, the Minister of Transport, Dan Ťok, said cheaper travel for students would bring the Czech Republic into line with other European states. Now, however, the scheme has been put back. Speaking to reporters on Monday, Mr. Ťok explained the delay.
The problem is that the regions have been waiting to find out the full wording of the decision. They haven't been sure what's going to happen. They will only then begin to modify their systems on the basis of that decision, and they say they will be required a period of 6 weeks for that.
The new date for the introduction of the fare reductions is the start of September, Mr. Ťok said. The delay follows a call last week from the Association of the Regions. The governor of the Liberec region, Martin Puta, said that if the original date were adhered to, some modes of transport would be unprepared for the change. The chairwoman of the Association of the Regions, Karlovy Vary governor Jana Vildumetsova, said she and her colleagues had been insufficiently informed about it. When it does come in, the scheme won't be cheap for the state, with the discounts costing a total of 5.8 billion crowns annually, the Czech news agency reported. Hospodářské noviny said last week that Mr. Babiš's assertion the money had been acquired through savings was misleading. The Business Daily said that some ministries were being forced to reduce their spending to cover the cost, and that the state could find itself short of funds at the end of the year. For their part, a students' group told Mr. Babiš that they didn't want cheaper transport if it meant corners were cut in education spending.
Ian Willoughby with that report. Just a reminder that you're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. For nearly 20 years, Czechs have been involved in saving the critically endangered Western Derby eland, the world's largest antelope living in Africa. The last wild population of this species can today be found only in the West African country of Senegal, and their fate depends solely on Czech-Senegalese cooperation. I spoke to Karolina Brandlová, head of Derbianus Conservation, an NGO responsible for the conservation projects in Senegal, and I first asked her to tell me more about the Western Derby eland.
The Derby eland is one of the largest antelope species in the world, or maybe really the largest antelope in the world. And it became critically endangered since last decades when increasing human pressure and poaching, agriculture and cattle grazing has really drove it to the edge of extinction.
So at the moment, how many specimens live in the wild?
We are especially concerned in the western Derby eland, the western subspecies, and it's now restricted only to Senegal. In this western African country, there is the only national park, Neokolokoba National Park, holding the last western Derby eland population. We used to say for a long time that there is the estimation about 170 individuals in the park based on the animal census from 2006. However, currently we have new experiences from new census from this February 2018, and by now no Derby eland was yet spotted in the park. We have some information that there are some pictures of relatively nice herd on the camera traps, but in fact we don't know how many individuals we still have in this park.
How difficult is it to actually spot these antelopes? What territory are we talking about?
So Neokolokoba National Park has 9,000 square kilometers, so it's a huge area. And we've been working there for years, and we have never spotted the Derby elands in the wild because it's extremely shy and difficult to see antelope.
And how many are actually kept in captivity?
We have started with the captive program in 2000 with one male and five females, which have been transported from the Neokolokoba National Park to the fenced reserve Bandia next to Dakar, next to the seaside. And currently this population grown up to 111 individuals.
What do you consider the main threats to this particular species at the moment?
You know, in the reserves, in fenced reserves, they are not threatened by poachers. The problem in the reserve, it's very limited founder basis. It means when we started with just one male and five female, it means that they are extremely endangered by potential genetic problems like inbreeding. The wild population still suffer from poaching and other human activities, so we would like somehow to help both of those populations.
And how many species do you need to sort of declare the species safe from extinction?
For us, when we can say, okay, we have succeeded, we have a vision that we will have a population, large population of Western Derby eland, which is freely roaming in the Neokolokoba without further threats. It means that the population should be large enough to even enable the local hunters to take some of the animals out of it and benefit of it. In my opinion, it's about maybe 500 at the least. And of course, we would like to go for more.
Czechs have been involved in saving the Western Derby eland for nearly 20 years, yeah. I believe. How have they actually become involved in saving a species living far away in Africa?
You know, all the projects started at the Faculty of Tropical Agri-Sciences at the Czech University of Life Sciences, Prague. At the time, it was Institute of Tropics and Subtropics. So we've been always focused on tropical countries and searching for different projects. And at that time, it were the government of Senegal who asked us to start this project in connection with the former embassy in Senegal, Czech embassy.
And how have you yourself become involved in this project?
Okay, I joined the project during my PhD studies, so when I worked at the same, corridor as the eland team, and I've been studying camels. That's also the hoofstock, so one day the colleagues from the antelope office came and asked me to join, so I joined.
So can you tell me a little bit more about Derbianus conservation? What are your main aims?
Derbianus Conservation is an NGO which has been established in 2010 and which followed a series of very successful projects from the faculty. It has been established because the governmental support, which we used to have before, was finished because of change of the policy of the Czech Republic. Senegal was no more the priority country, so we could not rely anymore for the governmental support. And we decided to establish the NGO to have opportunities for selling the merchandising and to search funds from different resources.
This is quite a large project. So what programs within this project are you currently running?
Our normal year-round activities within the conservation program involves annual identification of newborn calves, which means that we are really on ground present in the herds of the Derby elands. We are following the animals and try to recognize which calf belongs to which mother, which is quite complicated because we need to observe suckling directly. And that's quite a challenging task, but the information, it's very important because each eland has different stripe pattern, different number and shape of the stripes on the flank, and we can identify them according to this unique pattern. So based on known relationships between individuals like mother and calf pairs, we are able to produce complete stud book and complete pedigree of the whole semi-captive population. And this is of great use because we then can really plan the breeding management and we can avoid inbreeding. We can really work on maintaining as much genetic diversity as we can in the population.
And to what extent do you cooperate with the local community? Because I guess that's very important as well.
Of course, we know that we will not be in Senegal forever and that the Senegalese themselves, they have much more influence on the fate of the Derby eland than we have. That's why we are running a series of educational awareness programs starting from school kids, but also extended to the Senegalese parliament, to governmental policies, to universities. For us, it's very important to let know to the Senegalese that they have a real important animal which can be considered a flagship species for Senegal. And we are also educating tourists. To come to Senegal means to see the Western Derby eland, and that's how the conservation of the Western Derby eland can contribute to better Senegal, let's say.
You have recently launched a new project called Back Home. Yeah. Can you tell me a little bit more about it?
Back Home operation is a very important part of our activities because, as I said, we've been mostly working with the semi-captive population in the fence reserves. And now the numbers of elands in those reserves has grown such nicely that we decided to establish another breeding center directly in the Neokolokoba National Park, in the home area of the Western Derby elands. We would like to transport them at the first part of this project, 5 males, just to see whether they will be able to adapt there to the new conditions or old new conditions. And later in the next years, when we will be sure that the elands can cope with the environment, we will release some of them with the satellite collars and we will observe whether they will join the wild ones. We will monitor them also with the drones to see what they do, whether they have some social interactions and so on. And hopefully we will finally succeed to create a breeding group in Neokolokoba in this fenced area. And the last point, to catch another wild Western Derby elands and move them to the fenced reserves to ensure that the semi-captive population really has nice genetic value and the quality to really work as a true backup population to ensure the survival of the species also in those enclosures.
How long do you actually spend on average every year in Senegal?
For me, it's a bit complicated now because I have family, I have kids, so it's always a lot of negotiations to go there. Basically, this year I was the whole February in Senegal, and usually there is about several weeks in this dry season when we really work directly with the animals, and then several weeks in autumn when we prepare more in Dakar, the diplomatic missions and so on. So for me, it's about, let's say, 6 weeks now per year. But we have another team members which are not so occupied by families. So at least half of the year, someone should be on place.
What do you do when you are not saving Derby elands?
I'm working at the Faculty of Tropical Agri-Sciences as a head of the Department of Animal Science and Food Processing. So I'm teaching, I do research, mostly behavior research, but also I study a lot on the zoo animals, working with the zoo communities and antelope and giraffe breeders and a lot of stuff connected with it. But even my other activities are connected somehow with antelopes and are supporting the Derby eland conservation.
Karolina Brandlova talking there about Czech efforts to save the endangered Western Derby Eland antelope in Africa. And now it's time for another episode of our Hit of the Century series, in which we are now in the year 1993.
Hit of the Century.
In 1993, the Czech Republic experienced its first year of independence after its separation from Slovakia. An unprecedented number of foreign stars came to perform concerts in Prague and in other cities, including Suzanne Vega, Robert Plant, The Velvet Underground, Depeche Mode, Joan Baez, Deep Purple and Iggy Pop. After many years of performing on the Czech music scene, the Yo-Yo Band finally got the recognition that it deserved. Their LP album Karvina was already their fourth album, and while Yo-Yo Band's albums all contained hits, proper media coverage finally gave their hit a chance to turn into a widespread phenomenon. Besides the title song Karvina, the most popular song from their 1993 album was Rybitví, featuring Richard Tesařík's exciting wordplay and the rhythmically exuberant music of Vladimír Tesařík. It was played on the radio, on TV, in discos, and it even received a top national award for the most popular music hit of the year.
Znám taky jednu z Davids, tak ta je teda má. Rybitví, rybitví,
And that was another song in our series Hit of the Century, which brings us to the end of our programme here on Radio Prague. If you have any comments about today's programme, then please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. We'll be glad to hear from you. But that's all for now from me, Ruth Franková. Thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.